talking housing at Rosie on the House this morning. Ancient housing. Hohokam housing. Pit housing. And more with archaeologist Alan DeNoyer joining us by phone from Tucson. Alan, we've been talking a little bit about the discovery y'all made in the northern side of Tucson, but you were involved in a particularly cool discovery right in downtown Phoenix.
Yeah. We were kind of on between Madison and Jefferson Streets along in that stretch of roads down there, right downtown, like right around 12th Avenue. And we were excavating. They were putting a new water pipeline in, and we were excavating the middle of the street out. They had to dig a huge phase, and there's a huge site in there called, it's been named the La Via site. And we were working on that, and when we were talking about the backhoe, so we come in first with the backhoe, and we scrape down until we can see the outlines of the features. And then the archaeologist running the project gives each crew member a house to dig. And so the house that I got, when I started excavating it, it had burned. It was clear that it had burned down, and there was charcoal and ash and
now,
stuff everywhere.
Now, Alan, I just got to ask, how deep are we to the tops of these homes? Are we 6 inches under the street? Are we a foot under the feet?
On this one, probably a foot under the street.
Okay,
and
all right.
The street had been paved, cut down probably a little bit from the original ground surface, so probably about 2.5 to 3 feet below modern ground surface. But we're already dug down from their ground surface because these were pit houses, so they dug a pit, a hole.
Okay.
And when we dig with the backhoe, we dig down deep enough that we kind of go through their living surface so we can just see the features that they dug down into the ground. And so that's why we can see each individual house, and it makes it so much easier.
So the home you're excavating has burned.
Yes. So it burned down, and so I'm excavating across this floor, and there's just little bits of burnt corn and beans across the floor. And then I come to an area where there's a whole big mass of sherds where there were some crushed pots. And as I'm exposing down to these sherds, there's just gobs of burnt corn and gobs of burnt beans. And then I come to this jar that had been intact. And when the house burned down and the roof collapsed, it smashed it. But the jar had been filled with squash. It was like they took a squash and they smashed it up and they filled this jar with it. The house burned so hot that it charred all of these items, the corn and the beans and the squash. There were some chenopodium seeds. There were some prickly pear pads. It charcoaled it out, and when the roof came down on top of all of it, it smothered it so it didn't ash out. So when we come in and dig it, it's preserved and we can see it. It was amazing.
Just discovering that kind of stuff would be mind-bending.
And then what do you do with it?
Well, yeah, there's problems with you. We have folks that do the analysis on the vegetable materials, the plant materials, and we look for pollen, we do all these things. The carbonized stuff, you can only do so much with it because it's burned. So you can't see the original colors. So sometimes it's hard to ID it to an exact species. You can do pretty good, but it's a little bit harder. It shrinks a little bit when it burns. But it's better. It's the best we got, and it works really good.
Do you take these to the museum? Do you put them on eBay?
They eventually end up in a museum somewhere or a storage facility. All these materials get stored. Nothing gets kept by anybody. All that stuff ends up somewhere so that it can be used for future research. And I work with a lot of other people that go back into collections from excavated sites and relook at things, sites that were excavated 60, 70 years ago. And you can learn all kinds of new things from those sites. Just, we are always learning. And so every time we dig a site, we learn more. So we think right now we understand what's going on. But in 15 years, they're going to look back at us and say, those knuckleheads, they didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, Alan, we're going to have you back on because you were originally scheduled to be in studio, and you were going to bring 2 atlatls.
Yeah.
And you were going to teach me how to throw it. Describe what an atlatl is.
So an atlatl is, for all intents and purposes, an atlatl is a stick that you hold in your hand, and it has a little hook at one end. And what it does, it just makes your arm longer. It's a lever. And so prehistorically, they used atlatls to throw what we call darts with, and they're just very large arrows. They look like a giant arrow shaft. And then the projectile points that they made for these atlatl darts were larger than the later ones that were made for bow and arrows. And so atlatls were used here in the Southwest up until about 1,500 years ago, and then they were replaced by the bow and arrow.
I've just got to learn how to throw that.
Only because you like to say it so much.
How can you not?
Alan, he walks around the office going, atlatl? Atlatl?
Atlatl. Atlatl. Where's my atlatl?
I couldn't wait to have you on so he could get it out of his system.
The precursor to the bow and arrow.
Yes.
I mean, I've tried using the David and Goliath revolving slingshot thing.
Yeah.
I only get hurt.
It sounds dangerous. I don't know what that is, but yikes.
Yeah.
Like a sling? Oh, just a sling. Yeah, those are, they're fun.
Yeah, it's a sling with two, and you have to let go of one side just in time. And I've knocked myself out three times trying to learn how to use it. So I gotta get this atlatl and give it a try. I actually saw videos on y'all's website where you were teaching, it looked like kids to use them.
Yeah. Actually, in fact, I just got back from 2 days ago. I was over in New Mexico at a school in a course of an afternoon, we taught 120 kids how to use the atlatl and darts.
How cool. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Now, listen, talking about cool, I always try and promote the Pueblo Grande Museum. It's right here in Phoenix, folks, 44th Street in Washington. If you haven't been there, it is a beautiful demonstration of the early settlers, the canals that were dug by hand, 8 feet deep, 8 to 12 feet wide, irrigating the fields. But you have a particularly cool event you're going to this afternoon.
Yeah, there's going to be the cliff dwellings up at Tonto National Monument. They're having a candelabra event in the evening there, and in the afternoon I'll be there and a bunch of different Park Service folks. There'll be demonstrations, and it's a celebration of their anniversary of becoming a national monument.
Another great place to go visit if y'all haven't been there. It's just above Lake Roosevelt. You get into Globe, Miami, and you head down to Lake Roosevelt, or you come up Fish Creek and Apache Trail, or you come down through Pumpkin Center on the Pace and Beeline Highway. Three different ways to get there. It's Tonto National Monument. It's this afternoon. It's open to the public, right?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yep.
And what time are y'all going to get that event going this afternoon?
I think it starts around 1 to 1:30. It'll be there, and I'll be there for 2 or 3 hours through the middle of the afternoon. And I'm probably going to do some flint knapping demonstrations, but I'll bring an atlatl and have a dart there and just talk to people about it.
And did you say flint knapping?
So flint knapping is how you make arrowheads and atlatl dart points out of rock using deer antlers and other rocks. It's a passion of mine.
And you'll be giving a demonstration of that this afternoon.
Yes, I will.
That's awesome. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about, again, it just infatuates me, the population of people that were here. And one of the indications we have of how many communities were in the area were these ball courts.
Yes. Yeah, so you have, especially up in Phoenix, where you have the very large canal systems, people there along a canal, you would have many communities that lived along that canal. And communities of any great size had these ball courts, which we call them ball courts. They've actually found balls that were believed to be used in some sort of game that was played in them. But also, they're thought of as they're a community place to get together and have maybe a lot of trading, things like that happened around them. They were a big thing that brought communities together, and communities maybe along one canal segment, and maybe throughout a whole region, people would come together at a certain village at a certain period of time for, you know, activities, ball games, a lot of that kind of stuff. We, you know, there's the Mesoamerican ball game that they play down there, and this, it's thought that this is some sort of a version of that that they were playing.
And when I say ball courts, you know, they were community centers. They were the gathering areas. I'm not talking three or four or five of them.
Right.
I mean, from Buckeye along the Salt, down the Gila,
yep,
through the Santa Cruz, the San Pedro. I mean, if you would, yeah, just throw a number out there, how many ball courts are in that vicinity?
I think there's something like that are known. There's probably at least a couple of hundred ball courts that are known, and there probably were a lot more that they've either gotten destroyed, disturbed, or we just haven't been noticed yet.
Well, I love hiking throughout Arizona, and about 10 years ago, I was hiking with an archaeologist around Oracle, and.
Yeah.
I mean, just walking along the ground, he'd say, "Well, here's an ancient dwelling site right here. Look at the walls,
yep,
here and the clear." And to the untrained eye, it's just rock outcroppings that you can't recognize. I mean, it was the most fascinating hike I've ever had. You're gonna have to try and arrange where we put together some Rosie on the House listeners and get a couple archaeologists, and we just walk the desert, and y'all can start picking things out for us.
Oh, that would be great. That'd be really fun. Yeah. You know, that's the problem with archaeologists, though. If you go out with archaeologists, we never see animals. We're looking at the ground. I don't know how many branches I've walked into and about poked my eyeballs out.
Well, Alan, again, I can't thank you enough. Tell us in a minute, what is Archaeology Southwest?
Archaeology Southwest is a nonprofit organization down here in Tucson, and we put out a magazine two to three times a year on different parts of the Southwest about different archaeological things. Our most latest issue is about Phoenix Underground, and it's a big, thick issue. It's like a book. It's wonderful. And we do preservation. We help protect archaeological sites, preserve them, and do as much as we can to keep excavations to a minimum so we can preserve these things. There was no written languages back in the day, and so that's the only thing that's left of the Native Americans that were living in this part of the world, except for their ancestors, that is.
Well, Alan, you have a great trip up to Tonto National Monument. Have a great, great time with the visitors that come in and show them how to make their arrowheads and throw the addle-addles and do the luminarial walk there at Tonto National Monument. Folks, you can find it at tontonationalmonument.com. Get there this afternoon. You'll have a fabulous trip through Arizona. Alan DeNoyer, archaeologist, thanks a million.
We did post that event in the event section at rosieonthehouse.com so you can get a map and PDF and all the details you need to find
perfect.
That.
But great.
Before we let Alan go.
Okay.
Spell addle-addle for me once.
A-T-L-A-T-L.
A-T-L-A-T-L. Addle-addle. Now,
addle-addle.
We put a trivia question in our newsletter that it was apparently too hard for our listeners.
To win some
To win tickets? Which ones were these? These were Coyotes tickets.
Okay.
For next week. So, if you can spell addle-addle correctly, text it to 411-923. All correct spellings. We'll pick a random drawing if you want to attend the Coyotes game. And this is for next Saturday, December 23rd. Starts at 6 o'clock, and they play the Colorado Avalanche.
What was the question you had in the newsletter that was too hard?
Name three of Rosie and Jennifer's six kids.
Oh,
the closest one was Romy, Julia, and Jen Gura.
All right. Alan DeNoyer, archaeologist, we're going to have you back on. Thanks a million for making time this morning.
Okay. Yep.
All right. All right, folks. We'll be right back.